Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Ben Hunter. I'm here with the ever well-read Sarah McDooling.
Hello.
And we are delighted to be sitting across from Kelly Rimmer, who's come in today to talk about the things we cannot say.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Now, we're going to say all the things about things we cannot say, right?
Not all of them, no spoilers.
True. But I did read that this is partly, at least, inspired by your own family history. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. My maternal grandparents were Polish Catholics, and they immigrated to Australia in the early 50s. So I actually had the idea for this book probably somewhere around 10 years ago. We have every year my mum's family all meets at my uncle's house in Western Sydney in Blacktown. And we have a big Christmas celebration where we eat Polish food. And it's not that we spend a whole afternoon talking about the family heritage, but it is kind of like a touch point every year to, you know, back to mum's family and cousins and uncles and aunts. And so 10 years ago-ish, I was standing in the garden at my uncle's house, and I looked around and thought, oh, there's a lot of us now. And that thought kind of triggered this process of realization that every single one of us is Australian now. We all live here. There's more than 50 of us now, direct descendants from this Polish Catholic couple who were displaced by World War II. So I started to, they've both been dead for a long time, and so it's kind of too late to sit down with them and ask them what their story was. And at that point, I knew nothing about them. Like, you know, I'd known them as kids, but nothing about their story other than they were Polish and they ended up in Sydney. So I started doing a bit of reading about World War II just casually, just, you know, you'd call it research, but I wasn't intending to write a book specifically about this. But quickly found that there are a lot of stories written about World War II, but the experience of being a Polish person living in occupied Poland at that time isn't something that particular literature has really focused on. Lots of stories about the Jewish experience and even the experience in concentration camps, and so there should be, because those stories are horrific and they need to be told.
Very important.
Yeah. but this 5.6 million Polish people died during the occupation. So it's a big piece of history. And I, as I was doing that reading, I kind of became fascinated. And as so often happens, a fictional story kind of came into my head. And that was the story of Alina and Tomasz, which is basically the story of this book.
Oh, it sounds beautiful and potentially heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, heart pounding.
My kind of book.
All these kind of, they all involve hearts.
Yes. But you've got a dual timeline here.
Yes.
How do you manage that? Do you write one whole side of it and then switch, or is it continuous the whole way through?
I love dual timeline novels. Actually, I think all of my books have been either at least two points of view or dual timeline, because you get to look at a story from two completely different perspectives. And so in this case, I knew first what the historical timeline was going to be. The modern day timeline took a little bit longer to figure out. And I wrote them kind of simultaneously and then chop them up later. So they were kind of two separate stories that tied together at the end. But it's just such a really interesting technique, because it lets you just shine different lights on events. Yeah.
I'm a real sucker for a dual timeline.
Yeah, me too.
I feel like particularly when you're telling the story of a family, you know, it just allows you to really weave in and out of that complex family history so well.
Yes, and there's all these fascinating dynamics that you can play around with. And, and when you've got this story, there's characters from three different generations, you can have a look at how life has changed between someone of the grandmother's generation or someone of the World War II generation, and then there was this other generation that had a completely different world, and now our modern times, life has moved on so fast.
And so was there anything that you discovered while researching, whether it's about your family or just in general, that really surprised you?
Yes. So in 2017, my aunt and I went to Poland to research for this book. She translated for me. So many fascinating discoveries, partly because she is in her early 70s and I see her all fairly reasonable, you know, fairly frequently, but we spent this concentrated time together in Poland, looking at both the research you need to do for the book, but also digging into a bit of family history. And so while we were there, we were lucky enough that we could track down one of my grandmother's cousins. And that cousin happened, her family still owns the plot of land that had been my grandmother's until grandmother's family until the war. And so she took us there. So we actually got to go to the house that my grandmother had grown up in. And she, I had planned out the storyline for this book before we went. I was looking for detail basically while we were there. But there is, it's not a spoiler to say, but there's a set of twins in the book who are taken for forced labour early in the occupation. So there was a ruling in that part of Poland that the Nazis decided that every family who had children over 14 could keep one to help with the farm work, but the others all had to go to forced labour. And that actually happened to my grandmother. Mm-hmm. So we didn't know that. I certainly didn't know that before we went. So she at 14 was taken from her home and sent to a work farm. Yeah.
And doing what? Like making munitions? Or
It was a farm. It was growing produce,
like making produce.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, I got shivers hearing you speak about standing in the exact same house.
Like, it was so emotional. I didn't expect it to be. Like, you know, we met my cousin and my aunt. I had a historian who was taking us around, and she was kind of a tour guide, and she was driving for us that day. And so we knew whereabouts the house was, but we couldn't call her and say, oh, your distant cousin's from Australia visiting. Can we come and see you? So we just logged on her front doorstep.
Yeah.
And that was emotional itself, meeting someone who was my aunt's cousin. So I don't know what that makes it to me, some cousin. But then to go to the farm. So we had this little drive from her house to the property, which the house is abandoned, but the family still farm there. Mm. It's only tiny, like by Australian standards, it's a backyard. It's not a farm. Mm. It's so little. Mm. But there's rows of, you know, vegetables and whatever else. And so we pull up there. We've had half an hour in a car, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm quite rational about it. You know, oh, this is exciting. I wonder what the house is going to look like. And my grandmother had this picture on the wall in her house that I remember, and it made me think of Poland and her life in almost romantic terms. Like, it looks so dreamy and lush and easy, you know. And then we pull up to this rusty gate, and there's this tiny little house that is literally smaller than my living room. And it, you know, it's, they didn't have electricity connected, and there's, you know, well. So her experience up until 14, and then obviously from 14, would have been horrendous. But it was such a simple life. And then to think about her growing up there and her generations before her, that had been the family plot forever, you know, family plot of land. And it was so emotional. I was all teary, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. But there's some, like, you know, some connection there, and it was such a special experience. I was so lucky to have it. So I've used the modern day timeline. The main character goes back to Poland in researching her family history, and a lot of the emotions that I felt there, particularly ones like that caught me by surprise, I've used as I was writing her story. So that story is all fictional, but the emotional content, I was really lucky I could draw on some. Yeah,
that's amazing. And so if that was 2017, did you say?
Yep.
All up, like, researching and writing, how long did it take you to
get there? Yeah, I think it would be 10 years. So it wasn't like I only, you know, wasn't working on this book full-time for 10 years, but it would be 10 years from when I first had the idea to start writing about it too.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time coming.
It has,
with books in between.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of scared to write this one, because when you're writing about something so immense, to try and write about World War II is so, the gravity of it was absolutely petrifying, and still is. You know, I love research, and my books are always fairly research intensive, but this one, I remember I spent 3 days trying to figure out what kind of crystal radio the family would have. And it's one sentence in a book.
Yep.
So inefficient.
Details are important.
But I think the joy of that is, you know, if it's something you're passionate about, you can explore so many different pockets of this huge chapter of this huge saga of history, and just keep returning to different places and telling new stories. It's a gold mine.
Yes, and I think that's why at the moment there's so many books about World War II, but there's so many millions of stories that are still untold from that era.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're reading the same story over and over again. You know, there's so much yet that hasn't been told and described.
100%. And it's just a huge, like, devastatingly massive chapter in history.
Yes.
I think there'll always be stories to tell about it.
Yes.
But you've worked on one for 10 years, and it's very personal, and now it's out.
Yes.
And that must feel
terrifying.
It's not just out here. You're a bestseller in several different countries now.
Yeah. It's been a crazy ride so far. It's exciting, but crazy ride. So I'm excited to see how people receive it, but it is always like terrifying, you know, but especially with this book, because I think in the back of the writer's brain is this little pocket of, if I don't try quite that hard, like if it fails, it doesn't matter so much. I used up that whole pocket on this book. There's no reserve.
Well, I don't think you have to. I can confidently say I don't think you have to worry.
Thanks.
So if you've worked, how many books altogether now? You
did tell this us. Is number six.
So if you've written the five whilst having this one kind of cooking in the back of your mind, what happens next? Do you sort of just go book and book at a time, or do you have another one that's going to take a while?
Well, the first of the five I had actually written long time ago. It was only published in 2015, I think, 2014, yeah. Recently. But I had actually written the bulk of it a long time ago, and actually parts of the second as well. So, and I have just finished the next book. And I have ideas. I'm one of, there's two kinds of writers as far as I can tell. There's the ones who have one idea at a time and I have to write it. I have, except for this book, I tend to have like a notepad with 30 or 40 ideas, and like 29 of them are rubbish. And then there's one that might have some potential, you know, so I have lots of ideas, and ideas never have really been my problem. I have other weaknesses, but ideas I'm usually pretty flush with.
Have you ever like tried to pursue one of the ones and then thought, no, this isn't it?
I don't know. No, not really. No. I just like writing. I'm really lucky because I just like writing. I like having something to sink my teeth into. And it's not that it doesn't matter what it is, because it obviously does, but those ideas wouldn't end up scrawled in the notebook if I didn't think I could write them. So, yeah.
When you say 20 or 30 ideas, are they you know, fully fledged stories that you can flush out into a novel?
Sometimes.
Or are they sort of germs that could collide and become sort of marry a few together? And
sometimes it's just a concept, and you know, it might need another idea paired with it, especially for dual timeline. And then other times, the book that I've just finished for next year, I was like trying to figure out which book to write next, and I got home from walking my dogs one day and the whole book was there in my head. And what I've written is basically what I wrote, the whole synopsis in like 40 minutes. It just came to me, like a whole bunch of ideas came together while I was like, you know, obviously in the back of my mind while I'm walking the dogs, and then just bang.
That's phenomenal.
Remains to be seen if it's any good. but that, you know, it doesn't always happen that way. Mm-hmm. Certainly, particularly the modern day timeline, and this one took a lot more work to get it right and to figure out what exactly I was going to write about and how it was going to, you know, how it was going to evolve. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just an idea that just looks complete from the minute it delivers into the front of my brain, ready to go.
Gosh, that sounds quite stressful.
That was a very long 40 minutes. I was just like, write it down before I forget.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what does an average writing day look like for you?
I'm writing full time now. When I was working as well, I was very regimented. You know, I had to do a certain number of words a day, and I was, you know, very good at sitting down every day and doing a big chunk of work. And now that I'm writing full time, it's so haphazard. One day I'll do like 18 hours and then I won't write for 4 days. It's terrible. I do not recommend that approach at all.
Sounds painful.
My family would say so.
Wow. So if there's something that you've learned, you know, during the course of your career as a writer, like the main thing, what would it be? Impart some wisdom,
I think the thing that has worked for me so far is that I wanted to be a writer since I was like tiny, like 6 or 7. And so I always wrote, like the whole time, you know, when I remember I'm writing kind of maybe novella length fiction when I was 14, but I didn't really show anyone until my 30s. And it was just for me. It was like some people knit and some people watch TV, and Kelly's the weirdo that just writes for herself. And so that ingrained a love of the actual writing process. And and so now, because, you know, once you're published, there's like two sides to it. There's the publishing stuff and there's the writing stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the publishing stuff can be really hard work, and sometimes it's a joy. Like, this is fantastic. But there are other times where it's a business.
Hard work, the editorial process.
Yeah, editorials can be really tough, and dealing with, like, I get really great, lovely reader mail, and then I get not nice reader mail because I deliberately pick hot button topics, and so sometimes I get not nice emails. And
do you read them? Like, all the way to the end, if you know it's going to be a bad one.
Sometimes. I don't know. I feel like if they've taken the time to look me up, unless it's really hostile. I had recently had a really hostile one about my last book, which was about addiction and pregnancy. And, you know, I knew when I wrote it. I actually remember saying to someone, oh, I'm not looking forward to the emails about this book. So, you know, there's all that stuff. But if I remember why I wanted to do this and why it's exciting that I get to do it, it's a storytelling. That's what I wanted to do.
And you've obviously elicited a reaction. So.
Oh, absolutely.
So you've done your job.
That's
much better to infuriate someone than to leave them going, meh.
And for every cranky email I've had about that book in particular, I've had lovely emails, particularly from the US, from people whose families have been touched by the opioid crisis. And I've had a couple of really beautiful emails from people whose perspective changed a little bit. What more can you ask them for people to read your work and engage with it and be challenged by it enough to, you know, consider their own worldview? Like, that's ultimate
honour.
That's
what you're in it for, right?
Yeah. So.
That's amazing. Do you reply to them all?
Yep, I try to. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The really cranky ones, I don't. Unless I think there's a chance that we can actually have dialogue. You know, I try to.
That's.
Sometimes it takes me a while.
How do you. And you write books.
Yeah, see, it's about procrastination. If you're like, oh, I'm really stuck in that scene, what else can I do? It's clean the toilet, mop the floor. Oh, I've got, like, read a mail I can go and spend a couple of hours doing. That's much more pleasant than tackling the writer's block.
Oh, I love that idea. So you mentioned that you're kind of done writing the next one. Is that?
Yeah, I've just finished.
Can you clue us in?
On are you allowed to talk about it at all?
It's about so I haven't described this to anyone yet.
Oh wow!
So I don't know how succinct I can be.
You can be as vague as you want.
Okay, great. It's about a family. It's basically about two women dealing with the same same health challenge, but 40 years apart. So we see the way that society's moved on, and the different reactions to the people around them to the same health problem.
Oh,
and it's a mental health problem too.
Fascinating.
Yeah, we'll see.
Wow, and so that would that be a 2020?
Yes, at this stage. Unless my editor reads it and rings me in tears, going, it's a disaster, we can't fix it.
2021.
I'm sure that won't be the case.
Let's hope not.
Well, thanks for that little sneak peek into the future, though. That's cool for us to know.
Kelly, it's been a huge honour to have you here today, and thank you for being so candid and telling us about your process.
Thanks for having me. Thanks.
And listeners, you can buy any of Kelly's books online at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.